Cumberland?
Here.
Carlos.
Here.
Nancy.
Excellent. So, we have to understand far that.
I can't hear you, and I don't know if you can hear me. It's going in and out. Every time Anna has, she has her mic off right now.
Okay, so I have to get off again.
I can hear you, but now it's there's a lot of reverb. I lost y'all.
Annabelle, I think she just logged out of the Ward 6 conference room because that one wasn't allowing anyone to listen to any audio. So just give them 1 second.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jesus.
I was saying to retry it because the first one.
It's not letting me do it. Right up.
Okay, should I just take off the Ward 6 and then just open mine up? Okay.
Renee, does she have to be on team? Or can she call me? She can be on.
Okay. So.
Provide zero.
Yeah, do it. Just for a backup. But my cell says it's started. Okay. You can hear me now?
Okay. I can hear you, and it's clear, no reverb.
Good.
I don't see anybody, but I can hear you.
I can't do it. Huh? Yeah, I might do it again, but I can't do it. We can do it like this. Thank you. She just won't be able to see us because okay. I can't put this one up until I'm
not
able.
That. Not okay. She won't be able to see us, but as long as you can hear us, you can still see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. So as we left off, we've got a first and a second for the LAR and the meeting minutes.
Jaime Tadeos. Annabelle Dunez.
Present.
It's for the voting LAR in the minutes, Annabelle.
Oh, yay.
Okay, so item number three, report from the chairperson. I'm happy to introduce Nancy Hoff. She is our representative now for Ward 6, so you have officially been appointed to CPARP, so welcome to CPARP. I understand you're going to start working on your 80 hours. So this means you'll receive the information that you will not be able to vote on it until you actually finish your 80 hours.
That's what I'm told.
Yeah, so welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. And then in the audience, we have Jerry Flannery. Jerry, welcome. I understand you are interested in participating in CPARP.
That's
great. Okay, so my officially appointed to or do I have to make a special motion?
So, can we get a board decision?
Yeah. Okay, so I'd like to make a motion.
I mean, everyone's not on board.
It's only here. Okay, Annabelle, do you want to officially appoint Jerry Flannery?
Do I want to what?
So I'm introducing Jerry Flannery and make the recommendation that he becomes a non-voting member on the advisory board. Would you like to make a motion to appoint him?
Sure. I would like to move that we consider appointing Jerry Flannery to the CPAR board as a non-voting member with the hopes that he will entertain the idea of becoming a voting member provided he participate in the 80 hours of training, et cetera. More on Jerry. I am a colleague of Jerry's at the University of Arizona. I'm familiar with his interest in community engagement and very aware of community work. He's been in the community for a number of years. I knew that he was in the arts communities prior to coming to the university, so he is a recommended colleague and an interested party in serving our community, and that's why I put him. I'm actually putting him forward as a potential member of CPARP.
Annabelle?
Hi.
Annabelle, can you hear us?
She can't hear nothing again.
I can hear, but it is kind of, it cuts in and out. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you.
Yeah. And I'm voting on, I couldn't hear what the, is this just roll call for Jerry Flannery?
Oh, it cut again.
Yep. I'm so sorry, y'all. Yes!
Thank you. Item number four, call to the audience. At this time, the community may address the board with their concerns. The board may not address the specific concern at this meeting, however. The board may, at its discretion, make it a future agenda item, at which time there can be a discussion. Community members are asked to address the board, not a specific member. Each person is limited to 3 minutes. Okay.
All the, you know.
Great. Okay. So item number five, presentation. Introduction to the Tucson Community Safety, Health, and Wellness. Hi, everyone. Okay, I'm just going to make sure I'm set up here. Are we...
That's not working.
Okay. All right, today was the day that maybe changed my password, so I just thought to my computer right now. But let me see if I can. Are you ready to share this? I'm Lee Hawkins.
Lee,
okay. I'm representing both Brandy and myself.
Okay.
I think that. Can the folks online see this?
Yes, I can. I can see your screen.
But the audience in the room can't. Can we put it? Oh, you're working on it.
That's okay. No, I'm still trying to log in.
Well, so I'll just like chit chat for a moment about who I am. So I'm Lee Hopkins. I've been with the city since May of 22, so just over 2 years. I'm relatively new to Tucson. I've been living in Tucson for 3 years, but I've been doing this work for about 17 years. So I'm a licensed master social worker with a lot of experience working with individuals and families from all walks of life. Predominantly low-income immigrant individuals and families. I've worked a lot with the immigrant community. I'll introduce more of the team and explain a little bit about what we do in detail. But the folks I work with also, for the most part, are born and raised in Tucson. Many are multi-generational Tucsonans. We have half of our staff are bilingual, English and Spanish speaking. I also speak Spanish and French a little, not French, but Spanish. But I can get by in French. I have a professional working knowledge. We work with, on our team, we have behavioral health experts, housing experts, and social work experts. Our experience combined is over 100 years. Of experience, so that's what we're bringing to the table. And let's see, how are we coming along? And so today I'm going to talk about the Community Safety, Health, and Wellness Program, which is a mouthful. We are lovingly called CASHU, so you're welcome to call it that as well.
One second, we're just restarting the device. Sorry about this.
If you want to send us a presentation afterwards, you can send that out to everybody so they can see your images. If you just want to, so we're not pulled up from a technical standpoint, I'm fine with that unless you really want to.
I can keep going. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, there's keep going.
Okay. Yeah. Will we be able to show it eventually?
I don't think so.
Oh.
We're hoping.
We're hoping. It's just.
Not the easiest place to find. So we work in the El Pueblo Neighborhood Center in the former DES building. So many of you probably know
right,
that location in Building 15. We're just south of the library. And so in that building, we're called the Community Safety in that building is the Community Safety Health and Wellness Program, which I work for, as well as the Housing First Program. And the Housing First Program focuses on homeless outreach, getting folks into shelters, off the streets, and into permanent housing, and then help them stay in housing. So our teams work really closely together because there's so much overlap in the whole work. So the Community Safety, Health, and Wellness Program was conceptualized by the mayor and council in 2020 as a way to put those right works in the right hands and really take that social work and behavioral health burden as much as possible off of first responders and into the hands of social workers and behavioral health staff. And so our team plays a role in that. Like I mentioned, we also have sister departments that we work closely with and that provide complementary services like Housing First, Some of you may know of the TC3 team, Into Sign Fire. And we have a homeless protocol system, which is kind of how we engage with folks who are living unsheltered, that is also kind of part of this continuum. And there are units within TPD especially, as well as within public safety communications, that we work really, really closely with to take that burden off their shoulders. So the right work in the right hands, we have heard that. That is kind of the mission of a lot of this work. So we focus a lot on housing and homelessness. That's definitely the number one need coming our way. Mental health and substance abuse, violence and crisis prevention, and the big picture, poverty relief. There's a little picture of our team, something that care for. So there's kind of two cones of work that the community safety, health, and wellness team is investing in. One is really working with individuals and families, and I'll talk about that one first, to connect them with the resources that they need that are out in the community to either prevent crisis or recover from crisis. And so, like I mentioned, we have a team of care coordinators. There's five of them. And so they're, like I mentioned, they all come from extensive background in behavioral health, housing. One is a former nurse from ICU. We have one person who's worked for the city in Parks and Rec and youth recreation and is an EMT for 20 years. So they really come with a lot of experience. And most of our staff also have lived experience. They have gone through the recovery process themselves. They have lived on the streets for a period of their lives. And so they really know the work from a lived experience level as well as a technical level. So the way that we engage with individuals, the way that we know who to engage with, because it's a pretty small team of only five folks, we are not accessible to the general public as far as people, you know, sending folks in need our way. We are really a service internal to kind of provide a social service response to constituents who are engaging with other departments in the city. So we are having folks sent our way by 911, by different units in the Tucson Police Department, by the ward offices. So sometimes constituents will call their ward asking for help, and the wards can refer folks over to us, as well as the mayor's office, code enforcement. You know, the code inspectors are in a lot of folks' homes and identifying the issues of disability, poverty, medical needs, et cetera. And so we try to help folks stabilize their living situation to prevent homelessness, as well as through some of the outreach we do. We also are, who in this room is familiar with the 311 system? Okay, great. Not everyone. So it's pretty new. 311 is an alternative to 911 that is for non-emergency calls. Because over 50% of the calls that go into the 911 call center are non-emergency. And so 311 is kind of like a clearinghouse of all of the city services and all of the needs that the city can respond to that are non-emergency. So when someone's calling about, needing a therapist or needing an emergency shelter, or I can't pay rent this month, but I just got a job, so if I can figure out a way to pay this month, I'll be good starting next month. Those get sent through 311 to our team. Now, if you're calling about a pothole, you'll get sent to, you know, transportation, mobility. If you're calling about, you know, my landlord won't fix my AC, you'll get sent to code enforcement. So you'll get sent to whichever appropriate city department you're looking for. Our team is kind of the catch-all for social service needs. So we are also engaging the folks from 311. And then we also are doing neighborhood-based work that I'll talk about in the next slide. And so when we identify some folks who they need through our neighborhood-based work, then, you know, we reach out to them and provide connection to resources. And so some of what we do is we call it care coordination. That can look for anywhere from a phone call where someone can pay us a piece of information to know where to go for X, Y, Z. But I got it. I'll take it myself. I'll fill out the forms. I'll do it all. That can be a phone call. Sometimes that's all we're doing. Sometimes it's holding someone's hand for 6 months, to that therapy, that they're engaged in their behavioral health services, that their rent is being paid and that they're able to budget so that they're going to stay in that housing. So we really address it case by case, depending on what that particular person and family's needs are. Okay, cool. And like I said, that work is done in people's homes, over the phone, in community gathering places. We meet people where they're at. Folks are not coming to our office. We're going to them. And then, like I mentioned, also on 311, so our team of 5 care coordinators work 7 days a week. They have different shifts. And so we are calling people back when they call 311 for a social service need. We're responding to that call within 24 hours and in most cases providing information over the phone. And like I said, sometimes people have just really complex needs or have particularly high vulnerabilities. And so in that case, we'll say, hey, we're actually going to follow up with you more. We're going to assign you to a care coordinator, and then you're going to have that longer term kind of still short term, but a little bit more handholding. So here are just some pictures. You know, this is some homeless outreach we've done in the past, engaging with folks, trying to get them, you know, make sure they have their IDs, make sure that they're on the housing wait list, and trying to get them ready for housing, for when housing becomes available, if so. This is one of our care coordinators and one of her clients. We helped him get new bicycle wheels, a simple fix so that he can get around and go to work. And got him a haircut, free haircut. There's a great barbershop, Hollywood Barbershop, we work with, who they give free haircuts to folks who are unsheltered. So any questions before I move on to the next slide? I know there's a lot. Okay. I'll go to the next slide here. So we also are working on reducing violence and really fostering community leadership on a neighborhood level. Kind of a really City of Tucson-wide effort called, it was formerly called Place Network Investigations. Now it's called, I'm slowly memorizing the new acronym, it's Violence, Interruption, and Vitalization Action, VIVA, is the new title. And what that is an evidence-based practice that is being, you know, tested in a lot of different jurisdictions in the United States. But what it really does is TPD's role is to address, this is focused on the areas of Tucson that have the highest rates of gun violence historically. And so it's 3 locations currently. We're about to open a 4th. Those locations are on South Campbell and Bilby, East 22nd and Prudence, Dodge and Flower, Grant Alvernon, and then the next will be Fort Lowell and Stone, I believe. I'm still learning.
First and Stone.
Okay, great. And so what we're doing there is the police are really focusing on breaking up those crime networks that are So how do we, as community members, help?
Support programs, ask asking for things that fund these programs and get help, because we can arrest people all day. That's not going to solve addiction, and it's not going to solve stuff coming across the border. So that's we need more resources to get treatment.
Add to that. So we don't work in a silo. Our work is only possible with a ton of community-based organizations that we partner with who are also doing outreach and focused on behavioral health and trying to get folks into detox and helping them with their addictions and helping them get into housing and all of that. So I think to answer your question, there is so much more need than there are outreach workers and service availability. So I'm not pretending that there's an easy fix, mm-hmm. first of all.
Yeah.
I hear your concern, and I have the same concern. And we don't have a simple solution. Like Assistant Chief explained, we offer services. So that's one thing that's happening a lot, not just our team and the Housing First team, but a lot of those behavioral health and housing agencies, those nonprofits, they're out all over the city offering services. And when I say offering services, it's like, do you want to go to shelter? Do you have food? Can I help you connect with food? Do you have an ID? Can I help you get your birth certificate? Do you want to go to detox? Do you have a therapist? Do you want one? Do you have a doctor to go to? Like, and then if they say no and I want it, helping them actually make that connection and get, you know, whether it's enrolling in health insurance or driving them to the detox center, all of those things. But a lot of folks, and we're really seeing it, and I hate to say it, but it's really connected to the fentanyl addiction. Like, a lot of folks are just saying, no thanks, or they say it in a much more grotesque way.
Yeah.
And so it's something that we still need to crack. I am the representative for the city of Tucson on the Opioid Settlement Advisory Committee. The response to the fentanyl crisis is being led by the Pima County Health Department, but this is the work of our entire community. And so that's just one piece of the puzzle, is the settlement money. At least that's going to be able to invest in more of the behavioral health sector and kind of try to address some of the root causes. But that, as of now, is only $19 million. And in 18 years, it'll be $100 million that we'll get in total. So even though that is a lot of money, that's not alone going to solve the issue. I know that the health department has also got a lot more federal grants that they're using to be able to invest in, you know, mobile treatment so folks can get their methadone more easily and have a more productive lifestyle. Investment in trying in prevention, a lot of prevention for youth. Investment in services, not that the city of Tucson get the money, but investment in services similar to what we do in the nonprofit sector. That kind of handholding, you wrap services around the person until they're in a stable place to continue doing that on their own. So I don't know if I've answered your question.
I'm very familiar with all of those things that you're speaking of, and I really do appreciate that. I just don't know. I mean, kind of saying that there's so many things and so many issues, and what's the catalyst? How do we start this process? You know, how do we get this going so that gentleman's not run over?
One thing I'll add is if you have a chance to say something to that person, you can tell them, and I know not everyone has a phone. That's very real reality. But if someone has access to a phone, they can call 311 and our team will call them back and get them connected with the services that they need. It'll be up to them to follow through on that, but we will be able to make that connection.
Yeah.
So 311 is a golden number.
I appreciate your feedback. Thank you.
I think during the argument about the defund the police, I think this is exactly the program that most people are thinking about, saying we need to increase our efforts through something like cash instead of the police. So I guess the question is, I understand when they pick an area and you go into that area, but on a one-on-one thing, how does that happen logistically? An officer has contact with somebody who's clearly got needs that they know that you can serve. How do you get that information about this one person?
Great. So we can use an example. So there's different ways. Some of the departments, we have a form that people can fill out, and I get it into our database, and then I assign it to a care coordinator, pardon me. Or, you know, you've referred folks to us. Sometimes you call me. Sometimes you email me. Sometimes I get a call from Mickey. You know, we got to go do this this outreach. And so that's how. So it's basically contacting our program and providing as much information as possible for us to then try to engage with that person. And sometimes we're successful, sometimes we're not, because the person does have to be willing. Sometimes when we're dealing with like acute mental illness, someone who's highly, highly symptomatic, there's many times where folks say, like, I don't want help, you know. But they need it, and maybe they are causing disturbances for their neighbors and their community. The very rarest occasion, it's always our option of last resort, but there is a Arizona law that allows you to petition that someone have an involuntary psychological evaluation. Very rarely do we use that tool, and it's not in our power to enforce it. We simply submit the application. But there are folks sent our way, especially we work really closely with the mental health support team, which is a TPD unit that sounds like,
MIST.
Yeah, MIST. You all are familiar with MIST. So one of our staff members is the MIST liaison. So she goes over to the police station, meets with one of the MIST officers every Tuesday morning, and they sit down and they go through the list of, hey, these are all the folks who were reported as potentially having mental illness and don't have necessarily like a high threat or violence level. What they really need is a social work intervention, not a police intervention. And so Susie on our team goes through those cases with Officer Chan, and they determine, okay, so we'll go to their home and try to engage them and talk to them, or they kind of make a plan for each client of how to respond. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, let me go one step further. Mm-hmm. There is no longer any supervised probation at Tucson City Court. They did away with that years ago. And so they have unsupervised, which really is, I'm not sure what that means actually. And at any rate, what kind of relationships do you have with the courts? I mean, if the court clearly sees there's some needs here, are they referring people to you? I mean, you're not a direct provider in most of these. You're farming it out. So that's what a PO would do. So without that probation officer, are you able to work with the courts in that regard?
So the city court does have a care coordinator. She started about a year ago. Her name is Denise Briseño. She works in the public defender's office for city court. So they have staffed a similar role within city court, and we've kind of brought her into our circle. She like attends our team meetings and all that, just so that she can share with, you know, her fellow professionals and brainstorm. So that's kind of how that need has been filled. I'm sure that they could use more care coordinators at this, and that's just city court. Now with the county, well, I don't know about the county court. I know with the jail, there is a new, it's called the transition center. When folks are released from misdemeanor crimes, they can go through, it's literally like a trailer on the jail property, and they can get referrals, they can get a ride somewhere, they can get information about all the services that they need, they can get referred to like reentry programs, things like that. So there's also a lot of efforts at the city and the county level to try and put these social work interventions at key spots in which someone hopefully will take advantage of them. Any other questions?
I think I mean, it's very concerning that you, I feel like these, this fentanyl issue, the homelessness issue, it's like coming too close to like impacting our personal lives. Me personally, I work at SAVE, so we do have the syringe access program. So that's like the, one of the things that I often, not all the time, but I often do save. I have a very specific volunteer who was in recovery, was volunteering during SAP because, you know, they want to give back to the community. However, they relapsed recently. I happened to be friends with them on Facebook, and they were going through some sort of psychosis episode. So I reached out, and I offered some sort of help. They didn't show up for like 3 days, and then eventually they did. Upon further conversation, I was really not sure what to do after that because they were not a harm to themselves, not a harm to others. They were definitely believing a lot of different stuff, and I did not know what to do. Is that something that I can definitely refer to you all?
So when you called to try and get them help, who did you call? Did you call the crisis line?
I did not because that's not my, I mean, I'm not a caseworker and not a case manager. I did not know what to do. I kind of asked around my colleagues about, like, what should I do? They wanted to go, this person wanted to go to rehab, but not in Tucson. They wanted to go to Flagstaff or New York and California, and then they went up. But it was just more of, like, I thought about calling somebody at the department, but I was already there in that situation that I did not want them to feel unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like it took a lot of them to show up at that space with me. But I gave them a list of places that they can go
mm-hmm.
based on what they were needed on extensive outpatient mm-hmm. facility. But then at that point, I'm not allowed to take them. I'm not allowed to put them in my car. So I just kind of gave them the piece of paper, and I said, okay, just I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, going back, because I like mm-hmm. something that we can refer to you all, because it happens quite often.
Yeah. So there's a couple routes. So you can have them call 311 if they want information about programs that they want to learn more about, like, in Flagstaff, for example. Our team would have to research that because we're not experts outside of Tucson. But that's something someone could call 311 about and get directed to our team and get information. But you needed an immediate response because your friend was like actively in psychosis, right? Or this individual is actively. So in that case, so because of just our team structure and the way that we're working, we are able to rapidly respond to a situation. It's going to take us a few days to be able to assign the case and then reach out and engage. So in that case, and part of this is because the mental health crisis system already exists, is funded by Medicaid, and is robust. Pima County actually has a great one. So where I would recommend that you start is calling the mental health crisis line, which is 520-622-6000. They're 24/7, 365, and that's run by, it's called Solari, but it's overseen by the Behavioral Health Authority, right? What you can talk to, either you can say, this is what I'm observing or experiencing, what should I do? Or even better, the person you're looking out for help for can talk to them directly, that's better because of HIPAA, they can find out, like, what their insurance is. Are they already enrolled in behavioral health care? If not, they can arrange a follow-up. They have direct access to that because they are the behavioral health system. They're like the bosses of the behavioral health system and can then triage, like, with what next happened. One of the things that they can request, and this has to go through the crisis line, we aren't able to directly request it, is what's called a crisis mobile team. So they are behavioral health technicians who can come out, do an evaluation, and then transport someone as long as the person is interested and willing. It has to be voluntary in this case because they can't force someone. But if the person voluntarily wants to go to detox or the crisis response center to be able to get psychological help, they can transport them to both of those places. And they can also just provide them resources and information. A crisis mobile team will usually be able to get to your location in less than 2 hours, but it's not immediate. But it's much faster than our team would be able to get there. And they were created for that exact purpose, to kind of be that like rapid response, non-law enforcement, de-escalation, and like kind of psych evaluation service. I don't know if anyone else in the room who's like familiar with CMTs wants to add, or if there's any other suggestions of how you would navigate that situation. I know there's a lot of
If it's a crisis, even if you call 911, they'll direct you to 311 generally, and 311 will probably direct you to mental health numbers or different services. That's kind of what 311's role is now, is to take all those calls that are not, I need a police officer or a firefighter or a paramedic, but other things that fall between the cracks and kind of guide you in the right spot.
I think this is very valuable information. I mean, I work in the nonprofit sector for like the last 6 years, and working as a Rich Access program, I had no idea of what this is, right? So would it be able to be like possible to share, I mean, have someone come over to and give this presentation? Because I think this would definitely help us a lot with like, I mean, we are seeing people every single day who are in need of housing and so methadone and suboxone and all that, but we just don't have that knowledge.
Yeah. The system they don't make it easy, right? Like, yeah. This is all very bureaucratic. I mean, even when I'm trying to explain it, it's hard to explain without having everyone's eyes gloss over, right? So I'd be happy to come to your office and just help kind of walk through how the whole system is structured and our piece in that. But we're like one piece in the ecosystem.
I think that, I mean, SAFE has a really good relationship with TPD already. Mm-hmm. I feel like, there's a high turnover rate currently, and I feel like there's new people that need to know this.
Yeah.
Just like I feel like a lot, like half of my team definitely need to know this, because we were all kind of just asking each other what to do in this situation and nobody had any idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'd be great.
Great. Here, I'm
going to encourage. Question. Every city agency is going to say they don't get enough money. Oh, and that's just the regret, right? That's what they're going to say. And your program is fantastic and, quite frankly, long overdue. The budget's already done for this year, but the city's coming out now and asking for an increased sales tax and talking about how to apportion that. And I don't remember exactly, but I remember things like 27% is going to go to police cars. And I understand there's a need for police cars, but I'm curious what the city's interest in investing in your program is. Do you expect to see an increase for your program on that for sales tax request?
Great question. I actually studied all of the contents yesterday, so I know exactly the amount of dollars allocated to different amounts or different areas. So what the sales tax measure, pardon me, would allow for is just maintaining us as we are, because the city's going to experience this deficit. They need to just maintain the baseline. So our staffing would stay steady as far as what it would fund, but there's a lot of additional funding opportunities for us in this work. There's foundations, there's federal dollars, there's state grants. So part of my role is also to apply for grants, and that's how we probably will be able to expand our staffing in the coming years.
Thank you.
One quick note, do you have children? You are doing services for children.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant do I personally. I was yes, actually, I have to get home to my 8-month-old baby really soon.
Yeah. But do you have programs just for children?
So if someone is referred to us and they are a minor, we would have to work with, there would have to be a guardian in the picture or someone who could, you know, represent them. And then, yeah, we can connect them with, like, childcare, education.
The reason why I'm asking is I'm a member of Angel Charity, and we're looking for beneficiaries for 2026. So 2025 and 2026. But you'd have to have a consistent program just for children. Within Cashew would have a specific department that would just be services for children. And if you needed funding, you could apply for a grant with Angel Charity.
Okay. Thank you for telling me about that. Right now we wouldn't be eligible, but
okay.
May change. And a lot of our neighborhood based work is much more focused on youth specifically. So it's good to know.
Okay. Thank you. Go home to your child. Thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you all for
it was very informative. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Brandy Campion is the director of Housing First and interim director also for kind of our joint program. So she wanted to be here. She sends her greetings. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Very informative. So good call. Item number 6, review of TPD investigations. In accordance with Section 10A-88F of the Mayor Council mandate, the board may only review those charges specified in the investigation in order to comment on the fairness and thoroughness of the internal investigation and to report any concerns regarding that investigation to those specified in the mandate. So, looking at case number 22-0405, this incident occurred on April 15, 2022, where the complainant was arrested, and then post arrest and post decision with regards to his arrest. He made a complaint against the officers on October 17, 2022.
I can't make any comments on what you should say. I never read a thing. Problems with my computer and my computer.
Okay, so you can't make any comment on any of these. Okay. So this case in particular indicated that the officers had they did not have a warrant to enter the backyard, threatened him with pack if he did not consent. Called him a piece of shit and no pictures to document scratches on his face. And in conclusion, there were violations that occurred with regards to the Fourth Amendment violation, incomplete investigation, unprofessionalism, failure to make a report, and body worn camera in vehicle. Does anyone have any comments? If you'd like to make a motion on the fairness and thoroughness of the investigation.
I mean, I do have a question, but it's also kind of related to the next one. The case number 0175.
Okay, so do you want to make a motion on the fairness and thoroughness of this one, and then we can ask that question on the next one?
Sure.
Yeah. I move to you. Yes. Yeah.
Second?
Yes, that was that was the second. Yes.
Jaime Tadeo?
Hi.
Annabelle Nunez?
Shake your head.
Shake yes or no.
Abstaining. I'm not. I forgot this meeting was happening. And I apologize for that. I wasn't prepared at all. Which is why I'm here and not there. So I'm abstaining.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Yes, thank you. So case, thank you. So case number 23-0175. This occurred on May 18th, 2023. Occurred downtown. And excuse me. Received a complaint, a defense attorney with the city of Tucson. She wished to make a complaint against the officer, or with regards to rudeness, unprofessionalism, and failure to investigate. And the conclusions were the rudeness and unprofessionalism and failure to investigate were sustained. Any comments? Jaime.
Yeah. We're not my, well, yeah. So there was a case within the case in this file, right? Because we're going through, like, the case, the defendants, the attorneys complain about the officer being rude. And then suddenly, I mean, like, I was, and then suddenly I got into another case that I wasn't sure if it was related. So that kind of threw me off.
In the documents?
It was about somebody choking somebody's mother.
Would you like me to answer that?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
So I'm the lieutenant that reviewed the case. That same couple, he was initially in the courtroom for the second case that you read. So that was the case that you read through. That was the initial incident that got them into city court that day.
Oh, okay. So
it was included in the case file.
All right.
The second case was the investigation that they did on the incident that was followed up after the complaint was received.
Okay.
And the complaint was received by somebody from?
The complaint was made to OPS, and after OPS initiated.
With regards to the officer who got involved was pulled involved by the court because somebody had witnessed them arguing in an elevator, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So then that's the thing that was not investigated and followed through, which is why that led to a 10-hour suspension.
The detective...
I mean, 10-hour suspension, sorry.
The detective initially did not investigate it. When OPS received the complaint, then it was sent to the detectives for follow-up. Okay. So that was one of the allegations, was the failure to investigate.
So now my question. So on the case prior to the 22045, I mean, that was, I think it was pretty well documented, but the officer that did not have the warrant to go into the backyard received a 10-hour suspension. And then this officer who clearly did not also investigate and follow through that complaint also got a 10-hour suspension, right, on both cases?
The second one was a written reprimand, which is documented and it's going to stay in their file for that's what they found on the detective at the city court. The officers that went into the house without the warrant, they got the 10 hours.
Okay. Okay, does anybody want to go? Because I think I saw something about the 10-hour suspension. Unless I'm incorrect and I'm reading it wrong, but I guess what I was going to ask is, like, what led to the 10-hour suspension when there's the first case clearly had something, I think, like, major, right? Like, somebody's constitutional rights were violated, the Fourth Amendment, and then they got a 10-hour suspension. And I was just going to compare it to these two, like, what was considered for the first person not to get, like, a more severe, I guess, reprimand. I don't know. What's the word that I'm trying to say?
Fair and equitable.
Right. I mean, is that... I'm not questioning. I'm not questioning anybody's decision about giving a 10-hour suspension. I just kind of want to know, personally, like, why it wasn't more.
Tracking correctly, We do have a discipline matrix, and it's a thermometer. And we have policy violations or, like, the Fourth Amendment, different. They land in our thermometers in different areas. So, like, a blue would be something that we would not consider a very high offense. But once you start getting into the yellow and orange, and this one was in that realm, that's when we start looking at these specific violations and looking at the thermometer of the aggravating factors and mitigating factors. For the specific one of the search warrant, there were mitigating factors of when they went in there, warrantless. It wasn't in a violation where they used any evidence against the arrestee. It was more to try to appease the victim of that domestic violence. So they use it as mitigating to make it a 10-hour. When you think about the detective, again, you're losing that thermometer. When the lieutenant looked at the thermometer and the allegations there, a little bit different, and that's where it landed with the written reprimand. So that's what we're usually gauging, is that thermometer.
That answers that question.
Okay.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I, as for the record, I did not, I wasn't questioning what led to that decision. It was just more of me, I wanted to understand, because when I was reading that second case at 0175, I thought I read the 10 hours, and then there was different situations, and it was like the same sustained.
And to make it more fair and equitable for us, too, we also look at what we call light cases within maybe like a 2-year time period to say, did we do the same thing for someone in that time period that got the same kind of violation? Are we being consistent? Like, did we give someone that 10 hours and someone else nothing? Someone a 40 hours, you know, if it's this, if within that same box. So we're also looking at those light cases.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm trying to find where I saw the 10 hours. It was at the beginning, but I mean, regardless, that's good to know. That's pretty informative. Yeah.
So I will go ahead and make a motion on case number 23-0175, indicating that it was fair.
Wouldn't you like to second it?
Super good. Second.
Me and you, kid.
Yeah. And second. I'll second.
Thank you.
Right. Jaime Tadeo.
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez.
You said abstain.
Kate Cowell.
Aye. Thank you. Okay, so case number 23-0318. This occurred on August 23rd, 2023, in the Midtown. Essentially, the officers were responding to the complainant's apartment, referencing a court order, and the complainant stated that she preferred to talk to the female officer, and the other officer was trying to interrupt, was rude, unprofessional. No comment?
I think it's pretty straightforward.
Would you like to comment on the fair and thoroughness of the investigation?
Sure. I would like to move for case number 230318 to be fair and thorough.
And I'll second.
Annabelle Leo?
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez?
Abstain.
And Kate Calhoun?
Aye. Okay, so item number 7, Tucson Police Department. In accordance with the provisions of the state open public meeting law, these items that are listed on the agenda are in order to allow TPD to present a brief summary of current events. Pursuant to provisions ARS section 38-431-02, the board may not propose, discuss, deliberate, or take action at this meeting or on any matters in the update unless specific matter is properly noticed for legal action at a subsequent meeting. TPD updates regarding events or developments related to TPD during the prior month?
Well, as you know, we had the political day where we had different parties come in. We had Harris and Trump campaigns both visit the town on the same day, which led to pretty large crowds and a lot of resources. We got through all that, no issues, really no problems, got worked through it, got our candidates out of here safely. And the other big issue I think that's going on right now is the schools. Since last week, the threats have just been out of control. It's a nationwide issue. I think just about every school in Pima County has been hit with these threats. The school districts are responding. It started with these vague social media things. One person gets it, they share it with 10 other people who share it with 10 other people, and then you get others that see it and think it applies to their school, and then people panic, and it's causing a lot of unrest and chaos and concern with families and communities, so we're dealing with that. There's been, I believe, 5 arrests in the last 3 days of students who have made threats. So some are now acting out and seeking that attention and making a threat. So it's been pretty active. Our threat management unit has been out every night tracking down the people making these threats, posting pictures of guns, things like that. So that's going to continue to be a big issue. I think as long as social media can spread these things, we're going to continue to be heavily impacted by that.
Thank you. And I know we're not supposed to deliberate, but I would just like to make it very well known in the meeting minutes that I had the pleasure of working with, I think, almost the entire department last Thursday, and they were very professional, and a lightning rod event was kept safe, I think, because of our Tucson Police Department. So thank you guys very much.
And that's all I have.
So B, Office of Professional Standards. Do we have anybody from OPS here?
That was Lisette, and I'm just covering for that.
Okay.
I don't think we really have any
updates.
Any new updates,
okay,
or anything to go over.
Who was Lisette? Was that one of them here?
Lieutenant Goldman.
She was the one sitting down.
He was the one that explained how the thermometer and all
perfect.
That worked.
Okay, so she's now the lieutenant for OPS.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right. Thank you. Item number 8, Office of Independent Police Auditor.
All right. A few things. So the one, you probably don't remember, so I'm going to remind you, you need to track your training hours here. So at various times you had a chairperson that said individuals track their own and submit them to me. Other times you had chairpersons that would say, I'll track them all. And certainly Nancy Huff could talk to that. She's been through that before. But you're supposed to be tracking them. You've got an ordinance that requires you to try to get a certain number of hours, and then you get community members that will hold you to task on that and say, what kind of trainings are you getting? So you probably should be tracking these. For example, today's training, you know, I don't know how long she spoke, for an hour or so. You might want to track that.
I'll submit that to you.
Just
on the agenda, you've got the topic listed, so it just may be, and the presenters. Maybe easy just to write some names down on that. So please try to keep track about that. I will tell you, as Chief Peterson said, that they did not have any problems of any consequence when we had the political parties having their rallies, I guess. I'll tell you, from my perspective, there were no OPS complaints, and I've heard nothing as the IPA, the people calling and saying the police didn't handle something appropriately. It doesn't mean I still might not, but I would imagine I would have gotten those calls right away. It's pretty hot. They're going to want to call me as soon as possible. So I've had nothing. So that's good. I'm doing an awful lot of
ombudsman work. I mean, I triage in a lot of cases away from OPS. I get a lot of calls that really are not police complaints per se. They can't be investigated. They're talking about an issue that doesn't even involve TPD or doesn't involve law enforcement. So I deal with those. I work through those. I make referrals as necessary, but I'm able to keep those away from OPS so they can concentrate on some of their other cases. I'm doing more of those than I would like to, but I'm fielding what I need to. And you're going to talk about training later. If you want to bring somebody in from 311 or you want to bring somebody in from Housing First to give you, because they've been here before, but we have some new staff on board. So to maybe give you an update about how that's working out for Housing First, certainly Stacey Shaner, Chief Shaner, who is supposed to be here representing. She couldn't make it, and Mickey's filling in for her. But she's very well versed in the Housing First program. If you want to bring in Brandy Champion, that was Lee's supervisor, she'd love to come in and give you a very quick overview and an update, because you can talk for hours about those subjects, and I'm not so sure you wanted to hear that.
The question, just to be clear, because I didn't realize what Ed Felipe just said in reference to the training and you want us to track our hours. I didn't know that in meeting presentations counted towards that. So I have all my stuff from since I've been here, which is more than a year. I thought it was just the gentleman, I can't remember his name, TVD.
Yeah, Troy.
Troy. Yeah, I thought it was just going to the facility.
No, once you get your once you get those hours done to be able to fully participate in the voting number, you're still obligated on top of that to try to.
I understand. 40. But these count. I didn't know that. Thanks.
These absolutely count.
All right.
These won't count toward the 80 required by law. Those are very specific. But they do count toward your ongoing obligation.
Cool.
That's one. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so CPARB vacancies. Annabelle, were you appointed by Ward 3?
Yes.
Okay. So we have two CPARB vacancies, Ward 1 and Ward 2. And then, Nancy, I know you've got to go through training. Carlos, you're almost finished. Are you complete?
I need to be clear. I need to talk to Troy because I turned in a load of paperwork.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. And then, so now we're just down to where we would be vacant two positions. So, happy to have you all on board.
Chairperson, if I can, one more thing, want to bring people on to fill up, but as time goes by, you guys start to, you have a shelf, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ordinance allows you to serve only 8 years. And that's the maximum.
Only?
That's
joke.
Nice.
Only.
You know, if your appointer leaves, then you could be gone sooner, but the max would be 8 years, all things being equal. And I talked to Renee today about what your max dates are. Some of you may not even remember. I mean, do you remember how many years you got on? All right. I didn't think so. So I put together, and I'll certainly give Renee a copy of this as well, your max dates, the best that I could come up with. Nancy, of course, being the baby amongst us, is September of 2032. God willing, I'll be alive. Carlos, equally, 2032. Faith is 2028. You guys could be paroled sooner if you'd like.
So. Okay.
All right. Annabelle is, I don't know if you can hear me, but February or March of 2026. And then we've got Jaime would be March of 2026. So those are your mandatory out date, guys, or in any other changes. We're always looking at bringing people on. But we're getting, 2026 isn't that far away. So, again, please make an effort. I would hope to bring your friends and family in as well.
Thank you. Okay. So item number 10, future agenda items. We'll put you next month to kind of talk about your trip, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Daryl? Okay. Yep. Okay. So You want to explain? Because you'll probably explain better than I will.
Yeah, went to the Crisis Intervention Team International. It's the national conference, the annual conference in Indianapolis, and they had 1,800 people go with, I think it was 4 separate countries, and everyone kind of comes together and gets the national and the world view of dealing with people in crisis with mental health issues, and then they talked about opioids and homeless, like the full package and all what other states and agencies are doing and kind of the future moving ahead. So
that'd be great if you can present to us and some of the best practices that we'll be implementing in Tucson. That'd be great.
Sure. You want me to do a full hour like that?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Two. Three.
Yeah,
it'll
be
fun. Just make sure. Would you like to place that presentation for October? Is that good?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
And what do you want? 45 minutes for that?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Just make it a lot of questions.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it's not.
So we can
just,
okay. 30 minutes.
Yeah, just clip that. Yeah. Just, some highlights and that would be important to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So, Mitch, as you were saying earlier, the presentation we just saw tonight, it was short of an hour, but if we're now going to keep track of the ongoing training hours, which I do remember from years ago, so we can log that and round it up to an hour. And when Daryl does next month, 45 minutes, we're going to round that up to an hour, so we keep logging that.
It's your chair ultimately is going to be submitting those numbers.
Yes. That's perfect. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yes.
I'm not going to say yes.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Yes, Madam Chair.
A couple of years ago when I was chair, I had actually come up with some forms and some, like, ways to document it. I can dig all that stuff up if we want to get that formal. We just did COVID hit and we didn't kind of track on that. But if you would like, I can share what I created as a way to sort of kind of track that for people to sort of track that document.
That would be terrific.
Okay.
Clerk's office probably has.
Again, I apologize for tonight. Okay. Completely off my radar.
Take note to look.
You have, like, continuing education documents to fill out? Because I was just going to do an Excel file.
There possibly could be.
Yeah, you can do that. It was just something I meant to put in, a binder, so for myself to track what everybody was doing. And so people would report to me, like, you know, I did a drive-by with the police officers.
Ride along.
Thank you, Nancy. I can't see you, but thank you. Yeah, or hi. Good to see you. I'm so happy you're back.
We were on together in the old days.
In the olden days. But it was just a way really for me as chair to kind of track on that kind of stuff. But I think I also had asked the committee members at that time, you know, here's something for you to sort of keep track of, and then you can just share with me. But I can get all that to you if you want to, or if you just want to do a spreadsheet, whatever works for you.
Whatever you have is great, and then I'll look at what you have. I'll look what the city clerk has and get it over to you, sir.
And I must comment, Annabelle's house looks really quite beautiful.
Well, thank you. I wish it was my house.
Yeah, since we have some new staff, old staff, old new staff, ride-alongs are very highly recommended. Mayor and council have even put that in the ordinance as a suggestion. And I made pitches before, like giving you names of folks to contact in different areas. You can choose what hours you want to work, the area you want to work. If you forget who to contact, let me know. But it's an easy way to do it. It can be a great learning experience. It's something I think that the person that appointed you really would like you to do anyway. So if you have not yet done it, Carrie, you'd be on board with that as well, I guess. So please think about it. And any questions, Cindy, I'd be happy to help you.
In my former days, I did two, a couple of them, one during the day and one from 10 p.m. till 4 a.m. And I got to tell you,
That was something. It really gave me even a better appreciation if I could have been more impressed with what officers do on a daily shift or nightly shift in that case. Yeah, just amazing. Yeah, so I highly recommend it too. Crazy. Yeah. Wow.
Thank you.
And bless all the officers.
Thank you. Okay, at 6:59, anyone else have anything else to comment on? Officially adjourned. Chief?
Need a minute?
Oh, please.
Thank you.